call the first meeting of this State Government Finance Division to order. I'm sorry, I'm going to do my best to start on time, but we had a little trouble throwing the other people out first. And one of the things, some of the basic principles of how we're going to operate. One is, at least when we first start, people can take seats and sit anywhere they want. And I actually would like to do that, but unfortunately, being a budget committee, at some point we'll get budget books, and so we'll have to put the budget books out where you want them. So you can try sitting anywhere you want to sit now, but at some point we're going to decide that that's where you decided you wanted to sit, and your budget book will go there, and you'll stay there, and then you'll just have to move everything if you want to change your if you want to change your place.
Madam Chair, based on my experience with that policy and my committee yesterday, I would suggest that you rule out the chair in which you're sitting as one of the options. That was the first question.
No, I'm actually not. Representative Hilty, I'm actually not, because one of the things in terms of the interest in starting on time, and it's probably not as hard for a 2:15 committee as it could be for an 8 o'clock committee, is that there's an order, if I'm not here by any chance, and people are ready to start, there's an order of taking the gavel, which of course starts with the vice chairman, John Ward, and then after the vice chairman, it then goes to the lead Republican. And if those, if none of the three of us are there, then, well, we'll do introductions, but Brian will then pick somebody and he'll decide who. We are going to try to start the committee on time and end on time and do those sorts of good things that people have been lecturing us in the retreat. In general, I'm taking the role, the committee legislative assistant will take the role by looking around. We won't call the roll, and in general, my principle is, unless there's some awful abuse, my principle is if you don't show up, they'll probably just will automatically excuse you. And the other, and I don't, I tend, you know, as we get into it, we'll talk about what kind of roles we need. If you're doing huge delete all amendments, it is appropriate to tell the chair and to tell the committee person before. I don't like the idea of rule committees. It's supposed to have a more informal structure, so I don't like the idea of ruling things out of order because we didn't meet some arbitrary deadline, which as people who were remembered on some of these committees get impossible to meet at the end of the session when all the things you're doing really take place. So so I thought we'd start with committee introduction and jurisdictions, and I think we'll go around and have the members just say something about themselves. It's nice to see that there are some members that I haven't met so far. And my name, as you know, is Phyllis Kahn, and I've never exactly chaired this committee, but I've been a member of this committee since 1972, continuously. So I know, when I remember, I know where a lot of the bodies are buried. Anyway, let's go on with members and then go this way, this John. Just say where you're from and anything you want to about yourself.
Okay, I'm Representative John Ward, newly elected from District 12A, which is Brainerd, Baxter, Crosby, Ironton, Nisswa, that area. Originally from Proctor, Minnesota, up by Duluth, and just thrilled to be here. Thank you.
I'm Bill Hilty, representing District 8A, which is portions of Pine, Carlton, and St. Louis counties. I'm starting my 11th year in the Minnesota House and my 11th year on this committee.
My name is Ryan Winkler. I represent District 44B, which is parts of St. Louis Park and Golden Valley, and I'm pleased to be here in my first term.
My name is Carla Bigham. I represent 57A, which is a lot of Cottage Grove, most of South St. Paul Park, Newport, Great Cloud Island Township, and I'm also thrilled to be here, and this is of great interest to me.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I'm Jean Poppy. I represent District 27B, which includes the city of Austin, most of Mauer County, four townships in Fillmore County.
I'm Representative Lauren Solberg, District 3B. I'm an ex-official member, along with a couple others on this committee. Probably be popping in every once in a while. Represent District 3B is all of Aiken County and parts of Itasca County, including Grand Rapids. This is my 13th term, but I look around and I feel like a junior member with Representative Swigum and Representative Kahn being on the same committee. Good to be here also.
Okay. Representative Swigum, I don't think we've ever served on a committee together, have we? Maybe Ways and Means one. What?
Never had the privilege.
Okay, it's a pleasure.
Steve Swigum from parts of Goodview, Wabasha, and Winona.
Well, I'm Sarah Anderson, and I represent the Plymouth area and Medicine Lake. And I don't know if you're going to like this or not, but I was born in 1972. The year. I think that Carla's younger than me. She's not younger.
So. No, that's okay. Actually, not this past year, but my last three opponents before that have all used as their campaign that they were born after I was elected. And it stood for about 30% of the vote.
In your district.
Yes, yeah. In my district.
I represent Kurt Zellers. I represent the entire city of Osseo and the eastern the business for some of the members around the town at the shopping side of Maple Grove. This is my third term and my first opportunity to serve on a committee with Representative Kahn as well.
Afternoon, I'm Chris DeLaForest. This is my third term in the House, second term on this committee. And Madam Chair, I have to say one of the drawbacks of having you with the gavel is that you'll be unable to share your many anecdotes with us. I really did appreciate it. By the way, I am ready for the state fossil bill. I think the time is right. If you haven't heard it for the new people, Representative Kahn, amongst her wonderful anecdotes, has a great one about the state fossil that maybe she'll share publicly at some point. But one of the better ones.
Since we're going to be talking about the state capitol one today, I'll tell one anecdote, which I think I've told most of the DFL members at various things. But when I was sworn in, we didn't quite have this big family invitation stuff. I think our families only got to sit in the gallery and things like that. And my husband came with our two little kids that were like 8 and 10 or so, and my son got into the building and said, "This looks like a really neat place to climb around," and I've never brought him back. He's 42 now. My husband stayed, kept him there until they called the roll call twice, and then he said, "We're out of here. This place doesn't make any sense to me." So for those of you who had your family loyally with you all this time, you're doing better than me. Okay. Now we'll go to the staff members. Mark?
Hello, I'm Mark Shepard from the House Research Department.
I'm Helen Roberts from the House Fiscal Analysis Department.
I'm Krista Aderhoff, Committee Legislative.
I'm Brian Shackleton, Committee Administrator.
And we have the DFL Caucus Research and
DFL House Research.
And we have
Bob Shipman, Republican Caucus.
Yeah. And you can sit at the table or sit there. You can do whatever you want. Okay. Unless you run out of space. Okay. We thought we'd take a little bit of time today to discuss for Ms. Roberts and Mr. Shepard to talk about the jurisdiction of the committee and how things will work. And then we'll start something which I think will probably continue. I wasn't sure if we could fit it all into one day, so I thought we'd spread it out over two. We're going to look at this, I think, very exciting state capitol renovation plan, and then we're continuing it by doing our first field trip next Tuesday, which will be to walk around with these excellent guides to see what they've been talking about. So let's start with...
Madam Chair and members, again, I'm Helen Roberts from the House Fiscal Analysis Department. We're located on the third floor of the SOB, kind of split on the two sides of that floor. I'm going to just do a real brief overview because we do have the Department of Administration waiting. To begin, I want to point out there's two things that were in your packet. The first looks like this. It's general terms and acronyms. I'm not going to discuss this, but this is just two sections of a larger document that the House Fiscal Staff puts together every 2 years. The first section is general terms and acronyms that are relevant to every fiscal committee, and then a shorter section with state government terms that are relevant to the accounts in this committee. We do have, a larger document. If anybody would like a paper copy of that, I can get it to you. It has terms that are related to other finance divisions also. And then real briefly, I'm just going to discuss this memo from the House Fiscal Analysis Department that talks about the accounts that are in this committee. The House State Government Finance Division appropriates the funding for and oversees the operations of several state agencies and boards, as well as the legislature and the constitutional offices. You can see the constitutional offices are listed. We also have oversight over the various gaming entities, the Gambling Control Board, the Lottery, and the Racing Commission. The state agencies under this division are the Department of Administration, Administrative Hearings, the Campaign Finance and Public Disclosure Board, the Employee Relations Department, and I believe we'll continue to have oversight over that as the department is split up and moved to various state agencies. That's been in the news recently. The Finance Department, the State Board of Investment, the Department of Military Affairs is in this committee, but I should note that the Department of Veterans Affairs, which has traditionally been in this committee, is now in a separate Agriculture and Veterans Affairs division. The Office of Enterprise Technology and the Revenue Department are also under this committee's oversight. And then, in addition, we also have the pension funds, oversight over the various pension funds, and we have a portion of the state aids that go to some of the local pension funds in this committee. Another portion is carried in the tax bill. And then, finally, I want to note that some other agencies and accounts that returning members may be expecting to see in this committee have been moved to the Minnesota Heritage Finance Committee. Those include the Amateur Sports Commission, Public Broadcasting, the CAP Board, and the four councils that are listed. On the second page, I just briefly want to make two points. That despite its name, the State Government Finance Division does not fund all state agency operations. We are not responsible for the full bureaucracy, as some people might think. That's kind of a common misconception. Not all state employees are funded through the agencies that are in this committee. In fact, the state government, this division's general fund appropriations make up about 1.8% of the state general fund budget. Having said that, I'd like to also note that the agencies that are funded in this committee, agencies like the Department of Revenue, Sewer, Employee Relations, Admin, and the Office of Enterprise Technology, provide the basic infrastructure for the operation of state agencies, and I just provided a couple of examples of that. So, although we're a small part of the general fund budget, the activities that are funded in this committee have a very large impact on other state agency operations and other committees and the activities under those committees. And then real quickly, I'm just going to go through three charts. The first is a pie chart that shows the general fund distribution in this committee. And of course, we have other funds under this jurisdiction, the division's jurisdiction, but as the returning members know, much of the committee's focus will be on the general fund because that is the budget target that we have. And the pie chart simply shows that some of the larger executive branch agencies make up about 54% of the division's budget. The legislature itself makes up about 20% of the general fund budget, and then you can see the other breakdown. I should note the largest general fund agency is the Department of Revenue. The next sheet is a very simplified spreadsheet which shows the general fund base for this division. When we get into the committee's work, we do track all of the spending at a more detailed level, but I just wanted to put something simple together for members to look at to see what the various agencies and accounts are and their base funding for the upcoming biennium. And then finally, there's a pie chart that looks like the one you just looked at. This is the last page, but this is the all funds view for this committee. And you can see that by including other funds, the distribution between the accounts changes quite a bit. The Office of Enterprise Technology, which is only 1% of the committee's general fund budget, is now 13% of the all funds budget. Similarly, the Department of Administration jumps from, let's see, about 6% to 19%. That's because these agencies have internal service funds that provide services that other state agencies, Office of Enterprise Technology, provides telecommunications and technology services to state agencies, and the Department of Administration provides a large variety of services to state agencies. And so I just wanted to make that point that, again, there are some really significant operations of these state agencies that might get overlooked if you concentrate only on the general fund budget. And that's really all I have to say. And if members want any additional information on the accounts in our division, I am willing to provide anything I can get for you. I should also note that as the fiscal analyst for this committee, not only will I be helping you assemble the omnibus bill, but I'm also going to be coordinating the fiscal notes for any bills that come before this committee. So if you have any questions about that, I'm the person to talk to.
Okay. Two new members, so let's let them tell us who they are briefly. Mr. Lesh?
John Lesh, St. Paul.
Okay.
Melissa Hartman, northern suburbs of Brooklyn Park and Coon Rapids.
Okay. Lori? Thank you very much, Lori. With the two pages, tell us who they are. And
I'm Ron Ranello. When I do a fight, you'll call me the last 8 years. Okay. I've been intimidated because, sir, since you're born in 72, I'm not going to tell you when I was born, but I'm sure you're all good at math. I might end up being the state fossil. So.
I'm Andrew Kosiciak, and I think I have most people beat because I'm 1984.
Okay, great. Okay, we're now ready to go to the next item on our agenda, which is the let me also say one other thing about committee procedure, is that, you know, as you got the idea from Ms. Roberts, there are lots of ways that we intersect with state government, and so there are, so you know, even though some of our accounts may be pretty, you know, boring to use but if there's any issue that any member really wants to go into in great depth, I would be interested in forming a subcommittee or a working group. We'll see which structure fits best. Representative Portman has already talked to me about wants to look into the environmental aspects of state government, the issues of green buildings and things like that. And so I certainly intend to move in that direction. But any member who has any idea that anything they'd like to pursue, please just tell me. Sorry, Melissa, I didn't set it up today yet, but we'll get there. Okay. Commissioner Badger, if we're ready. So, I guess before we move, does anyone have any questions about procedure or lack of procedure? Okay.
Madam Chair and members, I am Dana Badger, the Commissioner of Administration. I can't tell you how pleased I am that our very first appearance before this committee includes just an incredibly important project, which is the restoration of the Minnesota State Capitol. Just to give you two sentences or so worth of history of this project, in 2001, there was a pre-design study authorized to look at the needs of all of the occupants of the Capitol, to look at the age of the systems of the Capitol, and come up with some recommended approaches. Since that time, we've been funded twice to begin to develop a schematic design. Last year's bonding bill included $1 million to continue that design. We did a competition. I'd say it was a national competition for a design firm. The winning firm among many submitters was Hamel, Green, and Abramson, here of the Twin Cities, supported by Schooley Caldwell, a nationally renowned capital renovation firm from Ohio. I have with me here Michael Bornberg, who is the principal and project manager on this wonderful project, and essentially the presentation this morning is his, so I'm going to turn it over to him.
Thank you, Commissioner. My name is Michael Bjornberg. I'm with Hamel, Green, and Abramson. Chairman Kahn, we've met before. I've shown you this. Can I take it through again?
perhaps while you're, I think the mouse is what's active, but while you are seeking that first slide, let me just mention that what you have before you, with the ink still wet, is a marketing brochure that we've prepared in the Department of Administration. We had a competition by which a firm from St. Cloud won the design competition with a number of pro bono services provided, and we've just published this. And it's intended to help, obviously, educate the legislature, but also to help educate your constituents, with the premise that this is going to be a large bonding project. It's in one legislator's, one representative's district and one senator's district, and on the other hand, it's in everyone's district because it is a state treasure. And so we feel that it is important that we educate the public about the need. There has been appearing on public television about an 11-minute video done by Senate Media, which you may or may not have seen, but it talks about the need for the renovation of the Capitol. So that's what you're looking at, and you're the first recipients of this brochure. So thank you.
I think if you get close, you can smell the ink. It's still drying on it. I'm odd to be here today. I'm also odd to be working on this building. It is not only a state treasure, it's a national treasure, and we'll talk about that. I've got listed the way I'm going to approach this PowerPoint. First is historical background. Then there'll be some project description information. And then from there, we'll benchmark other capitals so we get a sense of what's happening out there in the other capitol buildings. And then I'm going to present the design concept and then finally talk about implementation, which is the nuts and bolts of how this happens. I encourage questions as we go along, but be mindful of each category has specific detail on those as well. Okay? Great. This is Cass Gilbert's sketch, 1876. Most of you probably know 1896. Cass Gilbert was the architect for this. Cass Gilbert has done much architecture in his day, much around this area. This building launched him into monumental architecture. From here he moved to New York City. He built the tallest building in the world at the time, the Woolworth Building, Supreme Court Building, many buildings in New York City. This building still is considered one of the best eight capitals in the country. Historically significant building. Beautiful building. The goal then was a building of permanence. Minnesota was a young state to show that it really was in for the real deal. A land of progress moving forward. Quadriga, as we all know, is a wonderful golden symbol to that progress. And then an area of national prominence. And Minnesota has done that. It still is one of the top capitol buildings and also a player in the national political scene. Here the building is today. Beautiful. A stunning building. It has done everything that Cass intended and the legislature. A timeless building. At the time it was built, it was agreed by the legislature that it would be a state-of-the-art, most modern building in the state of Minnesota. First fully electrified building in the state. First building to have elevators throughout, telephones, anything that was state-of-the-art of that day was have fireproof construction, you name it. So this was the example not only for Minnesota but for the whole Midwest and the country that Minnesota knew how to do it right. That's no longer the condition of this building. When we started, initially we got into it and tried to understand the project. It was an interior restoration. As you walk in the building, as many of you know who work in it, and visitors to it, it's beautiful. It's gorgeous. Cass Gilbert was brilliant. He used marbles and stones from around the world. They're timeless. So it holds up very well. It's everything that's behind that wall, to come with the commissioner once. It's all junk behind the walls. And it's true. All the systems that support this building, infrastructure, 40 years, our air systems, our life safety, all those quality of the buildings that maintain the integrity of it are at the end of their lifespan. So that was one of the issues we had to do, is how to communicate that what you see isn't everything, that there's something behind those walls that really needs to be addressed, and it needs to be addressed in a comprehensive manner. The second was how to get it done. Develop a plan for how that happens, how we go from part to part of this building and keep it moving forward. And then there was a space shortage. How do we handle the space shortage to make this work? So these are some of the issues, I hope you can read this, that we saw as we got into it further. We had inefficient aging mechanical systems. We had heating and venting, air conditioning that does not meet modern code. Communication and technology systems that are erratic at best in the building. Safety and security is not up to what it should be. All the life safety systems exiting are not up to current code, and the building is not accessible. If I were to bring the plans in for this current building to you, you would not approve it for construction. Physical deterioration and damage. Most of you have seen the damage up on the third floor of the building from water. That water damage exists all the way down to the basement level of the building. We have inadequate, inefficient space. We have lack of adequate hearing rooms and office space in that building, and a lack of visitor services and amenities. So that was our task, move forward and look at all of that. These are pictures, some just examples of the building infrastructure, what you see behind those beautiful walls up above. That is not state-of-the-art, and that is not modern technology anymore. We have an excess of 25 individual air handling units in this building. The building is radically served for cooling and heating. This needs to be done differently. This is the stuff we really want to tackle comprehensively. This is an example of Kansas State Capitol, their new mechanical vaults, and what those new systems look like and how big that ductwork needs to be to really handle that air volume needs. So quite different. New vaults built outside the building, adjacent to the building of service. The slide you see on the right is going up, and you can see the opening that's going into the existing building. So all of that mechanical systems is handled, easy to get at, maintain, and then move into the building. It also takes it outside the building, puts it in secure facilities, and space specially built for that. Safety and security. 2001 pre-design was done prior to 9/11. 9/11 has changed how we look at security in the building. Security went moved from apprehension to mitigation now. The building is really set up for when something happens, you look at the pictures, and you try to find the person who did it, much like you see on the nightly news. Here's the guy who did it. You recognize him, can you find it? We move to mitigation. We try to prevent things from happening. Here's an example of the air intake for this building by the loading dock. 100 years ago, fresh air intake in the back of the building was no big deal, even front of the building. But currently now, if you drive up and park a truck and wait for the loading dock, everybody in the building knows when a truck's there, because this is where it's bringing in the fresh air. It's also very prone for security risks. Our building, in terms of life safety, does not have adequate sprinkler systems, detection for signage either. So this is something we need to address. We're looking at ways to take all those air handling for the major public spaces, put them up on the roof so they're out of touch. We also have identified from Homeland Security Report too many vehicles too close to the building, which poses a security risk. We have a port for shear that you can pull up a truck, park it, and there it is. You have vehicles behind the building. We have vehicles up in front of the building, as well as people who are walking from the vehicle to the building who are unprotected. This is the shot of our tunnel in the basement level of the building. The communication systems up in top of that tunnel show you they're very vulnerable. They could be easily dismantled. We have ductwork. We have storage in the corridors. There's a better way to do this stuff. Physical deterioration and damage. Like I said, everybody's familiar with some of the stuff in the third floor of the water damage, but water infiltration is the number one enemy of an old building. It does more to deteriorate a building than anything else. The slide in the bottom right is the basement level of the building. We have clear water after rain, and we have brown water typically on a regular basis. Our rain leaders and our storm drains in the building are 100 years old, cracked, and those are inside the building walls. We want to get at those and replace those. And then we have general deterioration around the building. Over the last 20 years, the majority of funds towards this building have been for quick emergency fixes. Not comprehensive long-term solutions, but fix something that needs to be fixed right now. So this is what you get. You get pieces fixed as they need to be, but you don't really solve the problem. Inadequate and inefficient space. One of those is primarily hearing rooms. Majority of the hearing rooms over in the Capitol have column spaces. So as far as the public participating in that process, it's a very difficult thing to do. And I think for you guys to experience as well, looking at the public and interacting with the public is very difficult. We look at increasing the hearing rooms and increasing column-free hearing room space in our expansion. Visitor accommodations, this is it. This is your visitor accommodations at the state capitol, one of the best state capitals in the country. A desk sitting in the rotunda space. It's also the first line of security for this building. You've got volunteer tour guides who are determining who is safe to come and go in the building. It's also where all the kids first come into the building. So you've got hundreds of kids who come in right into the rotunda. They've got no adequate restrooms. They've got no places to land and do the things they need to do. So this is one of the things you see a lot of state capitals are addressing is how do we address visitors into the building. I think it can be quite exciting what you do. And then inefficient space utilization. The building has had 100 years of bartering and multiple uses in the spaces. it can be reorganized and used much more effectively. Accessibility. The building is not fully accessible, nor are there adequate men's and women's restrooms on every floor of this building. That does not meet current code nor expectations for a building like this. It is probably the most public building in the state and yet has inadequate services. So for short of space, that was confirmed in 2001 and again in 2006. And part of that is we're adding restrooms, we're adding enclosed stairways, and we're adding hearing rooms and office space that need to be done. So being a historic building, we look to the National Park Service guidelines. We want to be very mindful of the historic fabric of this building and its role in historic buildings. So we look at how an addition can be considered for something like this. There's three ways to look at it. One is an exterior addition, and some capitals have successfully done that. This one would be very difficult to do that too without disrupting that historic fabric. I look at this building we're in, a judicial building, as examples of exterior additions that are freestanding. We have confirmed very little appetite for a freestanding state office building as an addition to this one, an additional one. So we've ruled that out. Another option is found space. Found space can best be described as the example of the north stair by the Rathskeller, where the kitchen was added underneath that north stair. Space that already existed and then is utilized for another use with very little visual impact, if any at all. We see many opportunities for that in the basement level of this building as well as underneath the south stair. So we can gain essentially a whole other floor in this building by better utilizing that basement space. Pull the mechanical systems and all those support systems out of that part of the building and better utilize that. And I'll show you more of that as we get into the design concepts. And then lastly, underground. You'll see this in a lot of capitals across the country. Many of them are about that same age, 100 years old, give or take. And they're all looking at the same kinds of issues. Is how do we handle that? There's a desire to keep those capital buildings as the center of state government. This is where everybody comes and participates in the government. They're not a museum. They're a functioning everyday building. So how do we add that space to keep that thing working? So you'll see a lot of visitor centers added underground as well as support space, mechanical space. So we found those last two options are the ones we explored the greatest for this project. We also look at benchmarking. And before I move to this, are there any questions on anything I've covered so far? Okay. We look at benchmarking. I showed three examples of other Capitol buildings. United States Capitol has had numerous additions. The dome itself is an addition to this building when it was originally built. They're currently undergoing a very large underground expansion, visitor center, auditorium space, cafeterias, that kind of stuff to really serve the visitors. And obviously one of the most visited buildings in the United States. And what's interesting about this is you can see on the slide on the right shows you the new entrance, which is that grade accessible. Very modest, very low key, so it doesn't impact historically on the existing Capitol building itself. You still go up the stairway, new stairway, onto the plaza and experience the building historically. Virginia State Capitol, Thomas Jefferson Building, one of my favorite architects. Half the size of our building, Temple on the Hill, very precious, very difficult to add onto. After much exploration and, again, a national search for a firm, there was a solution developed that was building under their hill, and then you see the upper slide, a new entrance, very modest. This is where all the visitors go in and then move through that new addition into the building, so they gain more space and visitor services that way. Kansas State House, we talked about our partner, School de Caldwell, currently working on this. This has been a nice example to look at. It's a similar building, albeit not as nice as ours. It's a similar building, and it's also being done in phases, as was proposed for the Minnesota Capitol. They're currently, the east wing is completed. They're now working on the center of the building and demolition, preparing to reconstruct, and then the west wing is under design work. These are a rendering and a current photo of the building. They found that from the front steps to the curb was a 10-foot differential they could work with. So they added all of those visitor services, loading dock, and mechanical spaces within that zone. So you see a rendering up in the top, new accessible entry, and then down below waiting for the stone to go on. So again, very little visual impact on the existing building itself. You also then, by doing that, pull that entrance point away from the existing historic building, which security-wise is a nice feature. So that brought us to our building. We wanted to look at this Minnesota Capitol not for solutions that are 5 years or 10 years, but prepare this for the next 100 years. It's a 100-year-old building. It's our legacy building. It's a building we can all be proud of. So how do we ensure that this building is where state government happens and people can interact in it? So looking at comprehensive solutions to it. There's two site plans. I'm going to start with the site. Now we're moving into the design concept. You'll see very little difference. I'll point out some of them. The upper one is existing site plan, shows the parking lots on the north side, Aurora Avenue on the south side with the parkings that currently exist, and then the little loop road to the Port Cushier. The bottom one is a preliminary look where we take Aurora Avenue and we bend it. We start the same curb cuts, but we bend it down below that lower stairway. We pull it away from the building. We pull parking away from the building on all the sides. We add more green space to the building. That also then becomes our new entry point for visitor services. We develop an on-grade entrance down below that lower level stairway. Okay? And then underneath the portion out in front of the building where the hill is, we're looking at a modest underground expansion as well as behind the building. So up above, existing lower level plan. You can see the line that runs longitudinally through it. That's existing tunnel connection. And then back behind it, at the upper part of the drawing, the Rathskeller and the Rathskeller kitchen. This level right now is sort of a rat's maze of offices and spaces, mechanical rooms, you name it. Very unsafe. I would challenge people, I could take a group of you down there on the tour, turn out the lights, and we can see who can get out first. I'm not sure it would even be me, and I've been down there a lot. So how can we better utilize this space? The lower level plan is our proposed one. You see on the south side of it, that's the expansion. The auditorium space below this existing south stair. We have underground expansion in the back and front, and I'll get into more detail on what that is.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Maybe as you go through the auditorium, so I've seen if you can point those.
Sure, I can do that.
So people can see it. It's
all right.
Kind of confusing for me.
I'll walk you through here. Get this mouse here. Here's the tunnel connection currently. And then that connects over here to State Office Building and over here to the other buildings. Here's the Rathskeller. Here's the kitchen that was developed under the stairs. There are currently two electrical vaults that are underground underneath those parking areas. This is that south stair structure, and it comes all the way out to here. Down here is our proposed expansion. Now, one of the interesting parts of this building, we're all familiar with the ground level and first levels, the wonderful grand public spaces that exist, which this one starts to show you. Here's a rotunda. Here's the corridor that runs around it and down. This is very similar to what you see in the rest of the building. That exists down in this basement level. Right here, you can start to see where the rotunda is. You can't. The only way you see it when you walk in the building is there are columns in these two spots where the corners are exposed and they're turned. That's that part of the rotunda. This is the corridor that goes around, similar to what you see on the floors above, and then move back through here. That's all been modified through time. Here's the hearing room spaces that exist above. Those kinds of things. So we're looking at coming down here. This is that new expansion under the hill. This is underneath the stair, a 500 to 600 seat auditorium space. These are the new entrances, new restrooms, new classrooms. Students come in here and visitors, and all those services are handy to them. Historic Society offices to set up for tours. We've added office space here that brings minority Senate from this building, State Office Building, over into this building as well. We have clear, distinguishable circulation in this space. We take those metal stairs that currently exist down, and we take those out and put in new grand stairs similar to the stairs above. We develop... We developed hearing room space in these areas. We remove the existing columns and corner pieces, and we do this in a stacked manner. So we get six additional hearing rooms, much better accommodated. We have private student dining and private dining expansion in these areas, so students have a place to eat their box lunches. And this is at an auditorium space. So we gain, essentially, a whole level of the building. And as this building is structured, the lowest levels are the largest footprints. So that's our found space approach. This shows you that stair. Aurora Avenue currently sits right here. We move that south of the stairs. And this is that monumental stair that exists now in the building. We take the stone off, we mark it, we store it, and we restructure this area underneath the stair to get our 500 to 600 seat auditorium. And I'll talk more about how we all our uses for that as we go along. And then there's all this found space underneath. These are a model in a picture of the Kansas underneath their stair. This model is how they started to explore what might happen with that space. These three windows are the Port Cushier. This is that space then, taken apart, restructured, and then stone applied back on the top. Shows you the kind of space they were able to find underneath the stair. No visual impact on the exterior. So, quite a find, quite an opportunity. This is Porter. This could be just about any of these capitals. This is typical of what you find in our state capital quarter. This can be done differently. This is not a safe space, nor is it very nice. This is a sketch from Kansas. Same space. This is what it looked like before. It is finished on one of the wings, and it looks very similar to what this is like. Much more pleasant space. Much more workable space. Great opportunity. So, the new underground addition, I pointed out, mechanical space up in here adjacent to the electrical vaults. We've got underground VIP parking and drop-off here, so we've secured some of those issues. Any important people who need to be dropped off securely, that happens in here. We've got secure receiving, so a truck is first authorized to come in, goods are checked in before they move into the building. Very different from what happens now. And we have this area underneath that provides us the office space for minority tenant. That frees up 40,000 square feet in the state office building for your use. We've also been through programming exercises with the user groups. We've restructured these spaces by committees, which is different from how they are structured now. So that's the new underground space. Also underneath that area where I just showed you is other mechanical vault space and media services space, studio space. What that also allows us to do is take those spaces outside the footprint of the building, set those up earlier. Underground, they're secure, and spaces specifically designed for that use. We've also, as I pointed out earlier, taken that tunnel out of the building and moved it south of the building. This was a sketch of an idea of how you move that tunnel and what starts to happen. You get to see the existing Capitol building, so you have orientations where you are. You get natural light down into borrowed spaces along that, so you always have a sense of where you are and fresh natural light. So, quite a difference. So, that being the concept, the next step is figuring out how you get it done and what's the plan for achieving that. We've looked at a series of scenarios for phasing. We've come down with one that is three pieces, each at 2 years, so a total 6-year construction cycle. That first step is the underground expansion outside the footprint of the existing building. So we set up the mechanical vaults, we set up the secure parking, secure receiving, we get the visitor services, and we get additional office space. So, and that also takes care of all the site work. So in that first 2 years, provide all the infrastructure we need for the expansion, for the renovation of the existing building and the services, and our site disruption is over. The second 2 years, we move into the east wing and the north wing. East wing has the Supreme Court chambers. Currently, they're in this building the first week out of the month. They have said they would stay in their building throughout this construction cycle. That leaves the north wing. North wing is the house. So what do we do in a 2-year cycle for the house chambers? That auditorium space I was talking about serves a multiple use of functions. First use is the house chamber space. So the house, while they're in session, is still in the building. They're in a new space set up specifically for them. And that's through those 2 years. And then after that, we go to the west wing and rotunda. At that point, the Senate moves out of their chambers, and they move into that space set up for them. Long term, that auditorium space can be used for multiple functions. At that size, 500 to 600 seats, the second largest space in downtown St. Paul. It can be used for state of the state address, it can be used for combined hearings, can be used for concerts, can be used for major speeches, can be used for gathering groups, for all kinds of things. So we see it as a multi-purpose space, and with the corridor in its location, it can be used any after hours, it can be used off session times, it can serve a larger role for this building. So those are the 3 2-year cycles. And when we're done, we want to have safe, energy-efficient mechanical systems, heating, venting, air conditioning, communication, and technology that meets current code and anticipates the future. We want to improve safety and security in this building. We want an accessible building. We want to stop physical deterioration and damage before it does more damage to the building. We want adequate, efficient space. We want adequate hearing rooms and office space and better visitor services and amenities.
Representative Bingham.
There must be some.
Yeah.
Madam Chair, how long of a process do you foresee this being upon the deliberation and if everything is approved? I'm just curious of how long the process would go for.
Okay. We're looking, Right. First time I've done a hearing, okay. So I think I start with you.
Yes, Madam, just saying, Madam Chair, I'm going to go on.
All right, thank you. I'll learn this. But
I have to remember it, too.
Yeah, okay, good, two of us. We're looking at a delivery system that's a construction manager at risk, which is new in this process. What that does is, at the end of design development, which would be mid-next year, we'd have design development completed. They would give us a guaranteed maximum price. So that's their, from their point on, it's their risk. We would like to start construction as soon as we can in fall 2008, which is, I think, January 4th after the National Republican Convention leaves town. We want to avoid major site disruption during that process.
September 4th,
yeah. But we want to avoid major disruption during that process. So that's, we'd like to start September 4th, 2008. And from there on, it's the 3 2-year cycles.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Badgerow, what are we looking at for money? Of course, one of the big questions will be money. How much money are we talking about? Bonding, general fund money? Give me an idea of what the funding plan looks like, at least if we adopt the Badgerow plan.
Commissioner? Madam Chair and Representative De La Forest, I guess I just am compelled to say that this is a plan that, of course, has been developed by our design consultants in consultation with the CAP board. And I do want to mention that the CAP board is our partner in this effort, and the CAP board has been hand in glove with us. So it is a consultative process that has arrived at this. However, I'm not the one to talk about the numbers. I think I should let Mr. Dornberg talk about the various alternatives in terms of numbers.
Always comes down to cost, doesn't it?
Yes.
Darn. We look at benchmarking to try to understand what the costs were, and I'm going to give you that as a background. Virginia project we saw is underway, half the size of ours. That's $150 million. Up to the Texas building, which was $566 million, and Texas, of course, always does everything in a grand fashion. Wisconsin, about $266 million. U.S. capital currently $660 million. Kansas is about $230 million. So when we looked at developing our estimate, which we developed a couple months ago, we brought in two of the top contractors locally. We brought in local subcontractors, our estimator, and another estimating firm. And we looked at trying to develop a comprehensive project estimate, including construction, owner's costs, escalation, and phasing contingencies as well. So we came up with a total 2006, today's numbers, construction cost of $153 million. Adding owner's cost and escalation, we found escalation to be an incredible cost for a large project over a period of time like this. We came up with $260 million for total project cost, escalated all the way up to the midpoint of construction. We've looked at funding that in two pieces if possible. One gets all the underground stuff, the infrastructure set in place for the rest of the building, and then a second request for the other half of that.
Madam Chair, if I may, I just had a couple more questions. Commissioner Badgerow, do you have any idea at this point where this project would fall on a list of priorities from the administration? I know it's rather early, but on the other hand, there has been scuttlebutt, at least, that there may be a bonding bill this year. And I know that at least, Madam Chair, in this committee, not only in a bipartisan but a unanimous basis, this committee has strongly supported this project. And I'm wondering if you could comment on the administration's position.
Madam Chair and Representative De La Forest, we've been strongly encouraged by the administration to pursue this design concept so that we know what we're talking about. Now, having said that, the issues as to whether this is or isn't the bonding year, which we know it is not, and the appetites either in terms of use of one-time money or bonding, I'm leaving that to my boss, the governor, who will be coming out with his budget here in just a little over a week. But we felt compelled to put this information in front of the legislature. This project has to be done. I think it is a question of when it's done. It is important to note that every year that we delay the project, escalation is about $20 to $25 million additional. These systems, over 40 years old, are going to fail. We do worry about their failure at the world's worst possible time. We're worried about a serial failure, one air handling unit after another. And so there are some substantial risks, not the least of which is escalation into the land. But obviously, our responsibility is to come up with the best possible plan. We hope we have done that. We believe we have done that. We've given you credible information with respect to the costs. And then, as I said, that in terms of timing and political will and appetite, we leave that to the legislature and the government.
Madam Chair, if I might, I just had one final question. We are talking about, at least pursuant to this plan, creating an extra 40,000 square feet of office space. And a problem around here that we've encountered, Madam Chair, is creating office space without the subsequent infrastructure to support it, namely parking. And I saw a plan for secure parking, but I'm wondering if I could have a bit more information about the plan for parking in general. For example, assuming that this 40,000 square feet, Commissioner Badger, I'm sure we anticipate to fill it somehow. And I'm wondering, do we have a plan to create more parking spaces? And I think consistent with that as well is, I think one of the great inconveniences for the people we represent is we encourage people to come here and visit, and then we make it really hard for them to park somewhere. And so I'm wondering if there's any piece of the plan here that tries to address those issues.
Madam Chair and Representative DeLaForest, I couldn't agree with you more. I think the public parking situation in the Capitol complex is really deplorable. Part of that is bad signage, which we need to fix. But let me just take this in a sequence, if I can. As you see, we remove all surface parking from around the Capitol, both on Aurora Avenue and on the two lots to the north of the Capitol. That displaces 183 parkers, mostly members of the Senate and their staffs.
An issue that previous members of this committee have been well aware of.
Representative Conner, but Madam Chair, I believe that addresses a perennial issue from about 1970 for this committee.
And Madam Chair and Representative DeLaForest, obviously we've been working closely with the Senate, many of whose personal offices and personal parking spaces would be affected by this plan, and have met with a surprising amount of acceptance of the fact that those parking spaces are going to go away in the interest of security. We do have a short-term plan, which is all we're presenting or thinking about at the moment. Those 183 parking places would be accommodated in the admin ramp, both in terms of current vacancies and displacing current occupants of the admin ramp. That would leave those people then connected by the tunnel to the Capitol. However, we know, having gone through this now for the last two legislative sessions and all of the issues around parking, we in the Department of Administration owe the legislature a comprehensive parking plan. It's not within the purview of this project, but concomitant with it, and obviously this is a six-year project, so we won't be encountering those problems right away, but we do owe that plan to you. Some of the contingency factors are, of course, Central Corridor, and whether or not Central Corridor is built and what impact it has on the commuting patterns of people in the Capitol complex, and the space that it takes along University Avenue, I think will help shape or inform what we come back with a comprehensive parking plan. But I do make that commitment to you. We will do that just as soon as we can.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Whitman.
Follow up on the Central Avenue Light Rail corridor issue, is there a plan to provide improved pedestrian access to the front of the Capitol? I'm not exactly sure where that line is planned to come through in this area, but is that part of your planning for this particular project?
Madam Chair and Representative, is it Winkler?
Yes.
We believe that the Central Corridor path is right along University Avenue. Whether or not it is above grade or below grade, at that point, we don't really know. It does go along University, and as we understand it, it turns south at Robert Street and goes south at that point. Not an expert in the Central Corridor. Obviously, we have people on staff who are closely involved in watching what's going on there, and we will be informed by it. Our plans will have to be accommodating of that. The pedestrian access is an interesting one. This Aurora Avenue really is intended as primarily pedestrian access drop-off for all those school buses and for emergency vehicles and handicap accessibility. So we would intend that it be exclusively used for that purpose.
Any other questions?
Madam Chair.
Yes.
You had mentioned that 40,000 square feet of space would be taken from here, basically moved over there. We'd move all the Senate Republicans over to the Capitol. Have you looked at what the cost would be to renovate the space here in the state office building, and what's the intent for that space and so forth?
Madam Chair and Representative Anderson. just bear in mind, though, that becomes a reality in 2014. So I think we have plenty of time to plan for that. There are no shortage of agencies should the House decide not to use and need the space or want the space, which I guess is still to be determined, there are any number of agencies who desire to be in the Capitol complex. Last session, we talked, for example, about a renovation of the Ford building as a home for a number of small agencies who would find it more useful to be in the Capitol complex. So there's a lot of elements at play in terms of how we might use that space, what it might cost to renovate, but we have, I think, plenty of time to think about that.
Okay. Representative Portman.
Thank you. Since you brought up the Ford building, I just want to mention that I hope we will talk about that again this year. And if it makes more sense for somebody to bring me up to speed on it in my office individually, I'd just love to hear what our possibilities are for that building.
I think we have enough new members that we will probably have a presentation on it. And looking at the time, I'm 8 years out of this chair, and I'm don't remember how long things take. We might have actually gotten our walk in today, which I didn't schedule, so maybe on Tuesday when we start, maybe we'll start with talking about other things in the Capitol complex. We'll start with talk about some of the history of the buildings, and we'll do a little bit on the Ford building, and you'll have some idea about how. So because we will start by meeting here, and then we will walk over to the Capitol to see what we were talking about. But that looks like that might fit into the schedule too for our hearing.
Madam Chair, Representative Portman, we'd be glad to do that.
Okay.
You have my commitment. I just want to go on record is that the Ford building will be preserved during my term in office. We had a study group that strongly recommended that, and certainly as long as I am the Commissioner of Administration, we will preserve that building, and ultimately we will find its highest and best use.
You know, are there other questions on this? Representative Portman.
I just think its highest and best use is to have some high-quality food in it.
we need to tell people where the Ford building is. Not everyone knows where that is. So
yeah.
Probably don't have any map in front
we
of us.
We don't, Madam Chair, but it is just across on the north side of University Avenue. It is one of the original Ford Motor Company manufacturing facilities. It is just to the north of the state office building, next to the Lutheran Church. It is a building that has been mothballed because of its condition. But we are preserving it, hoping that someday we will have both the use and the money to make it right.
Yes. Okay. Okay. One of the questions that I'd also like to raise, since Representative Portman raised that, is actually the taking another building, which clearly wasn't valid for historical building, but it's kind of a surprise to see it taken down, was the education building that got taken down just behind the church. And I don't think any of us, at least I didn't know, maybe some people knew that it was going to be taken down. It's obviously not the level of interest that the Ford building would have, but one of the things that some of us have been looking at some of the things that existed in the state capitol complex and have been taken away or stopped and that we might like to restore, like, for example, a child care center and so forth. What went into the decision to take that building down, and how was it, and who went through the hoops on that? What kind of hoops did anyone have to go through? I think there are some legislators who are looking at putting some more barriers in the way of that kind of thing happening again.
Madam Chair, I believe it did get sufficient, quite a bit of legislative airing. That's 168 Aurora. There was legislation which designated that 168 Aurora be utilized as a child care center, providing that we could find a private provider to operate one. After several competitions, we had really only one interested party, who after an extensive period of time working with that party was unable to come up with either the financing or the plan to do so. The building itself was really in deplorable condition. There was really nothing worth preserving in it. It had significant asbestos problems. And to be honest with you, it really was not suited, given its configuration as a child care center. It would have been very difficult to have made it accessible, for instance. So, again, its highest and best use, regrettably, was as a parking lot. But I appreciate the desire to be involved and know about other kinds of plans like that, but Perhaps Ms. Roberts could testify that, or could attest that we did have any number of discussions in various committees around 168 Aurora. I believe Representative Pepin, in fact, was one of the proponents of that legislation.
Madam Chair.
Senator Winkler.
One other quick follow-up on the cost issue for the capital preservation. Do you have an off-the-cuff or maybe something better estimate of the operational cost savings from improving the mechanical equipment and so on? With the, I think that's an important part of the equation, at least.
Yes.
Well, I'm just going to say we probably don't have numbers, to, Madam Chair and Representative Winkler, we probably don't have numbers that would be too gratifying to you because, of course, we're adding usable space. So net-net, we will be using greater energy, but the degree of energy efficiency of the lighting, the air handling, and other systems in the building will be order of magnitude better. So we've obviously done some calculations of the cost of occupancy, but it's difficult to compare apples to apples because we're gaining so much additional usable space.
A per square foot cost or something that's supposed to be. No. Sorry.
We can certainly, knowing that that's an interest, we'll certainly pursue that and try to get you some data. Okay.
Any other? Any other comments? Anyone from the audience have any questions or comments? I notice we have Historical Society and Cap Board, and I didn't look at accounts that carefully, but it kind of seems strange to have the Cap Board move away from the Department of Administration from this division, but I guess that's probably going to be a very friendly division to be in. So it may. Certainly. But are there any comments or questions from anyone from the audience? Okay. Well, thank you. And we'll be back here on Tuesday at 2:15, hearing a little bit more about buildings and then to being ready for a tour of the Capitol area.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Okay.
Thank you.
We won't have to be outside. We don't need coast at all, do we? Okay. Thanks. Meeting adjourned.